Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as the tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. And we have got some terrific combatants in that war and observers and analysts of it to join us today to discuss some of the most important issues that are arising, beginning with our first guest, David Bossie. He is the founder and president of a tremendous organization called Citizens United. He is an investigative journalist as well as a congressional staffer in the past, and a man who has perhaps sealed his place in history by a court case in the name of his organization involving our right to free speech in elections. David Bossie, you have been a contributor to many a good fight over the years. I wanted to get your sense of the one that is underway at the moment involving Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann and with somewhat lesser attention to them, four other congressmen, in connection with this business about the Muslim Brotherhood's influence operations inside the United States, specifically inside the United States government. Give us your read on what's going on here and what's at stake.
First of all, thanks for having me back, Frank. I really appreciate the opportunity to visit with you about these very important issues and what these people are doing, whether it's Michelle Bachmann or Congressman Franks, Gohmert, Rooney, or Westmoreland. What they did, very simply and practically, was submit letters to the inspectors general of many government agencies, the Department of Defense, Department of State, National Intelligence. And what they did was simply ask a series of questions about people in our government, individuals being associated or potentially affected by foreign influences, which has been done through the history of the United States, by the way. And it is a perfectly acceptable thing, especially since literally the same day that this story broke last week, an independent report led by the former FBI director, William Webster, who is, you know, no conservative activist. He's not a left-wing activist. He's not a right-wing activist. He's just a very well-considered former FBI director.
And former CIA director.
CIA director, right. Thank you very much. Right. So that came out. He was hired and asked to head an independent study of the Fort Hood shooting, all elements of it, the actual day of the shooting, the aftermath of the shooting, and what led to the shooting by Nidal Hassan, an Islamic radical. What really permeated from that report to me was that the FBI agents did not investigate Hassan because of political correctness. And this fatal mistake, this fatal flaw in our veneer, this insidious nature of what is the worst part of American politics today in the mainstream media, is the berating people into line. And so political correctness caused the murder of 13 people at Fort Hood, because if they had been able to investigate him, if they had felt like they weren't going to be named racist or any number of names, that people do today, then maybe, just maybe, that this guy Hassan would have been uncovered and therefore stopped prior to his mass murder spree. That's the insidious nature of the fight we are in, and those are facts. That what happened in Fort Hood on that day is a fact. That Hassan was an Islamic radical is a fact. The fact is that the government did not investigate him because of political correctness. Now, that's a standalone case. However, we understand, you and I and the five members of Congress who asked very simply in congressional letters, does political correctness play a role in our government's giving out security clearances? Does it allow for the Muslim Brotherhood to permeate our public policy? Is it affecting and infecting the White House and their public policy? So I think those are all very important questions that must be asked. And these five people, these five members of Congress, led by Michelle Bachmann, because they just hate her so, because they just have this natural desire to attack her at every turn, because she's decided to pick up a weapon and stand a post. She decided that she was going to defend our freedoms at every turn for many years. And so, certainly, if I was in her camp, would I have said, hey, you know what, let's ask these questions, let's do all this without putting, you know, a staffer's name in it? Because as a former staffer, as a guy who was the chief investigator for Congress during the 90s, and somebody who investigated the Clintons relentlessly, and whose name was in letters like this all the time from the left, you know, Republicans stood tall for me at every turn, because they didn't like because members didn't like members picking on staffers, at least how it's assumed. And so you could see, you know, how that could be perceived. So I would have probably said, hey, let's name her without naming her. That's one way to solve, you know, what potentially happened. But they want to attack Michelle Bachmann for what is really an oversight, in my opinion, by naming her. But they want to attack her because she's been a leader against the Muslim Brotherhood, against radical Islam, for the last 4 years that she's been in the House of Representatives, and they see her as a danger, as a leader who is dangerous in their pursuits.
Yeah, well, that's the point. It's really an effort to demonize and take down, if they can, a formidable political adversary in Michelle Bachmann. And I think to the extent that these other members are getting sort of glancing treatment by comparison suggests that they are not similarly viewed, or at least would not be as important a political trophy were they to be removed from office. Just on this question about the individual staffer who has gotten so much attention and brought so much fire to bear on
Anthony Weiner's wife.
Anthony Weiner's wife, Abedin is her last name, not her married name, Huma Abedin. We have just released a report, David, and I'm sure you haven't had a chance to see it, but we call it Ties That Bind, the Views and Agenda of Huma Abedin's Islamist Mother. This is an important contribution. I, like you, think that we need to keep our eye on the larger problem here, which is not just Huma Abedin, not just what she has been up to, I think, certainly in ways that seem to reflect the desires of her Islamist mother, not just what's happening in the State Department, but the larger challenge that we're facing of what the Brotherhood calls civilization jihad inside the United States. But David, in just a minute, you have had serious responsibilities looking after, you know, the security of the United States and the comportment of those in office sworn to uphold its laws and constitution. Is there any question in your mind that the security clearance process is broken if it ignores the extent to which individuals, just take this one example, Huma Abedin comes to mind, Mohammed Majid of the Islamic Society of North America, now a member of the Countering Violent Extremism Working Group of the Homeland Security Department, and he's a top Muslim Brotherhood operative. Is this system not broken?
It certainly seems to be. It certainly is a dangerous thing that, unfortunately, Frank, I'm going to tell you, I don't believe it'll get fixed until we have a catastrophe on our hands and people are asking, why did this happen? How did this happen? The insidious nature, and as you point out, and I'm going to look at your report, but some, your other reports that I've seen over the last many years show me that you know, are very articulate on what the Muslim Brotherhood's all about and how they are willing to wage war at every level, whether it's violent or nonviolent, and that's very important for every American to understand. And I urge every American to go read Andy McCarthy. Andrew McCarthy is a former U.S. attorney in New York who prosecuted the blind sheik over the 1995 World Trade Center bombing and many other cases.
Our audience is very familiar with him. We have him on every Tuesday, and we will look forward to talking with him about both today's new piece at PJ Media and his excellent one over the weekend at National Review Online. David, we have to let it go at this. Thank you so much. We'll be picking up in a moment with Siv Gorka, another expert in the business of countering the Islamist and Muslim Brotherhood threat, right after this.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Sebastian Gorka. He is one of our country's leading authorities on some of the issues we were talking about a moment ago with David Bossy, specifically the kind of war we're in and the fact that we seem to have a pretty hard time even acknowledging we're in it. He is a contributing author to a brand new book called Fighting the Ideological War, Winning Strategies from Communism to Islamism. It is edited, as it happens, by his splendid wife, Catherine Gorka, and Patrick Sukdeo, another man I admire greatly in this battle space. Sebastian, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Congratulations on the new book, and I want to talk about your particular contribution to it in a moment. But before we do, one sort of case in point as to whether or not we understand that we are in such a war is the thrash that we were talking about with David Bossy before you joined us, going on at the moment in Washington over whether it is appropriate for inquiries to be conducted by the various inspectors general of the possibility that influence operations by the Muslim Brotherhood are being mounted against our government. Do you have thoughts on this kerfuffle, if I should call it that? And more to the point, what are the likelihood, is the likelihood, I guess I should say, that the Brotherhood is in fact trying to subvert us from within through influence operations and the like?
Well, Well, it's great to be back on the show, Frank. Let me start with a personal story, if I may, that I think illustrates the paucity of our approach to matters subversive today. Until very recently, I became an American citizen about 2 months ago, and until that point...
Congratulations. Glad to have you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Until that point, whenever I flew back into the U.S. after a business trip, I had to fill out on the plane a U.S. immigration visa waiver form. And I've been doing this for years, and I just find it amusing, and I'd like, you know, I wonder what you think about it, Frank. One of the key questions on this visa waiver form is, have you ever been or are you still a member of the National Socialist Party of Germany? The World War II was 60-plus years ago, but there's no question on that form about whether the person entering the United States is a member of a Salafist organization or the Muslim Brotherhood. So there seems to be a disjuncture in what we identify as organizations who have subversive intent to this very day. And I am convinced, I think as many of your colleagues are at the center, that the real threats aren't another 9/11 necessarily. It's not the big kinetic violent event that really is the primary threat. I think today it is a slow chipping away at the constitutional order of the United States through political action, through the imposition of economic and legal tools that are unconstitutional. And I think the question of do we have malefactors, do we have individuals connected to subversive organizations, either in government or simply influencing government, is an incredibly important one, especially if we consider the Holy Land Foundation trial, which was America's biggest terrorism financing trial, and indicted and locked away individuals who had very close ties to U.S. Government organizations. If they did back then, just a few years ago, why would they have given up, is the obvious question.
Yeah. We're speaking with Sebastian Gorka. He is the Military Affairs Fellow and a director at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. And Sebastian, I'm so glad you mentioned the Holy Land Foundation trial, because in many ways it's kind of the Rosetta Stone on what we're up against, in that it, as you know, introduced into evidence a number of very important documents that have afforded us insights into this stealthy form, for want of a better term, of jihad, civilization jihad, as the Brotherhood calls it, that it has been mounting against us for some time. I couldn't agree with you more that it's an entirely legitimate focus for activity. In fact, it's unbelievable that there's this much controversy about doing it. Let's segue to the piece that you have contributed to this marvelous new book, Fighting the Ideological War. You have focused specifically on the enemy threat doctrine of al-Qaeda. And I just wonder if we could, is there a difference between the threat doctrine of al-Qaeda and that of the Muslim Brotherhood, in your professional judgment, Seb Gorka? Admittedly, there is some difference on tactics, to be sure, at least for the moment. But fundamentally, isn't the shared doctrine what they call Sharia? And doesn't it animate both of them equally?
Superb question, Frank. The realization that practitioners in the national security field and also concerned U.S. citizens really have to arrive at is that what we're talking about is not disparate threat groups, not different threat organizations. What we're talking about are members of the same team. Al-Qaeda, if you read the key strategic documents, the documents from individuals such as Syed Qutb, Bin Laden's former mentor, Abdullah Azam, or Brigadier S.K. Malik. These are the key ideologues of global jihadism. If you compare those documents to the Muslim Brotherhood's founding charter, which is still in force today, you see that the thing that binds all of these threat groups is their strategic objective. They are committed to... just think about one historical fact. The Brotherhood was created 4 years after Kemal Atatürk dissolved the caliphate, after the first president of Turkey dissolved the theocratic empire of Islam. The Brotherhood was created exactly in response to that dissolution, to recreate the caliphate, to reintegrate religion and politics and bring Islam back to some kind of theocratic empire. And it has not changed its strategic goal. The difference between these actors, between whether it's Al-Shabaab, whether it is Al-Qaeda in Islamic Maghreb or the Brotherhood, are only issues of tactics and timing. And I think if you look at the jihadi websites in the last 10 years, since September 11th, you also see a fascinating development. We are facing an enemy that learns. And those organizations that were committed to a more kinetic, a more violent war against the West and against the civilization that we are a member of, that those groups have learned that perhaps the more efficacious way is the indirect, is the one that is not kinetic, the one that uses the law, that uses economics, that uses the ballot box to undermine democracy, just as we see in the so-called Arab Spring. So we have an enemy that learns, and we have an enemy that can use violence against us, but maybe even more dangerous in its non-violent attacks against us.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Seb, and this is what makes this current controversy so infuriating, really, to those of us who have had some grounding in the multifaceted and adaptive nature of this enemy, that we find people who clearly haven't given it a moment's thought, or as our friend Andy McCarthy points out, in the case of Senator McCain, actually thought very differently a year ago, and today seems to be of a mind with the Obama administration that reaching out to and engaging and empowering and otherwise making common cause with the Brotherhood is ideal future course for the United States. In a minute, Seb Gorka, if you could please, given the great thought that you have given to fighting an ideological foe like these adherents to Sharia, how critical is it to your way of thinking that we, at the very least, understand the nature of the enemy if we have any hope to counter it?
Oh, it's crucial. As somebody I worked with in the national security environment said, if the enemy can limit what you're allowed to say about him, they've already won. And that's the quandary we're in right now. We do not have the capacity, for various reasons, many of them to do with political correctness, to talk honestly about who the enemy is, what they want, and how they wish to achieve it. Think of the analogy. In the Cold War, if the communists called themselves communists, we did not call them misguided Democrats. We were not banned from using certain words that they used for themselves. But today we are. Today we cannot talk honestly about what the enemy is and what they call themselves. As Sun Tzu taught us many thousand years ago, the first responsibility in warfare is to understand the enemy. If you can't understand the enemy, you can't defeat him.
Amen. Seb Gorka, thank you so much for these comments and your insights, and also for your contribution to the new book, Fighting the Ideological War, Winning Strategies from Communism to Islamism. We better start understanding those strategies as well as the nature of the enemy and applying them effectively. Next up, Roger Noriega joins us to discuss Chavismo without Chavez.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, parents. Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. A recent movie about former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher reminded us of the woman whose visionary leadership and fortitude, particularly in the fight against Soviet communism, earned her the nickname the Iron Lady. It turns out that we have our own Iron Lady in Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota. Her Thatcheresque qualities are evident in her call for an official effort to expose and correct Muslim Brotherhood influence operations inside our government, a threat every bit as dangerous as communist subversion a generation ago. She has been singled out for the most virulent and unfounded attacks, even from leaders of her own party. Her response was vintage Bachmann. I will not be silenced. America's Iron Lady must not be silenced or otherwise punished for her leadership in countering the Muslim Brotherhood. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedomradio.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
I'm a champion. Realize checks mechanism.
Hi, Shaquille O'Neal for Rat. It's not your normal PSA. Don't be stupid. Don't drink and drive. If you're going to go out and have a good time, it's fine. But designate a driver to drive home. Let's stop the madness. Don't drink and drive.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
We're back, joined by Roger Noriega, the guy we turn to for commentary and analysis on what is going on inside our own hemisphere. He brings to the topic a wealth of experience, not least as an Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs. He also served on the National Security Council staff with that portfolio and as the U.S. Ambassador to the Organization of American States. He is now with the American Enterprise Institute and a driving force behind a terrific web resource, InterAmericanSecurityWatch.com. Roger, let's start with sort of an update from you on what is going on in Venezuela. And as a result of the relationship between the Chavez regime and some of the worst actors on the planet, how Chavismo, if it you will, or at least the program that he espouses in terms of subversion and anti-Americanism, are spreading elsewhere around the world?
Well, absolutely. They do enough damage, the Chavistas, right here in our own hemisphere, undermining democracy, breaking the consensus at the OAS on fighting drugs and terrorism and supporting human rights. So they've done a lot of damage here.
And subverting regimes and arming them and all the rest. Right, go
absolutely.
Ahead.
Absolutely. The small arms that the Russians are building now in Venezuela, ending up in the hands of drug traffickers and everyone else. They've also provided substantial and critical support to Syria in the form of oil shipments in the open, an absolute disregard for the international regime against such support, as also in total disregard for the mayhem and murder that results from this regime.
In part, I think, as you've pointed out, Roger, fueled by the in their tanks and armored personnel carriers and the like, by the fuel that they're getting from Venezuela.
Absolutely. They're preparing their fourth shipment in about 8 months, the Wall Street Journal's reported. And so this is really indispensable support for that regime and sustaining bloodshed that's going on. Something that's sort of interesting is that the same people, the Chinese and the Russians, that are supporting Syria are also major backers of the Chavista regime. And my concern is that as Chavez succumbs to this cancer, and as this narco regime that he leaves behind tries to hold on to power, you could see a sort of Syria crackdown, Syria bloodshed happening right here in our hemisphere, fueled by about $4 billion worth of new small arms sales that are destined for the militias in Venezuela, and all this bankrolled by the Chinese. So quite frankly, we see this same kind of mayhem coming right to our doorstep. And again, President Obama said just a couple of weeks ago that Venezuela is not a threat. And frankly, it just demonstrates that he's not paying the least bit of attention to this festering problem.
Yeah. I think, Roger Noriega, that comment came after our last conversation, and I haven't had a chance to visit with you about it. He received a fair amount of criticism for this sort of whistling past the graveyard from, among others, his presidential rival, Mitt Romney. Just objectively, is there any basis, in your judgment, as a serious student of the matter, as well as a past policy practitioner in this space, for saying such a thing about Hugo Chavez and his regime and what is coming next?
Well, you know, if you have sort of a minimalist passive policy, as they do, their justification is, well, we don't want to pump up Chavez by paying attention.
They meaning
to him.
Well, the Obama administration.
He is absolutely... reached out to our worst enemies, built alliances with Iran and terrorists and narco-traffickers, all under this policy of not provoking Chavez. So we can see the danger that he represents by not provoking him. And I give Governor Romney a lot of credit for mentioning Venezuela on a regular basis and mentioning the hemisphere recently as part of his economic plan. So it's just that this administration just doesn't want to invest any sort of political capital and spend so much time trying to coddle our enemies in the hemisphere, or would-be enemies, Ecuador, Bolivia, the Nicaraguans, the Salvadorans, the Cubans, and very little time paying attention to those countries that want to be our economic and political partners in the Americas. And it just shows it. Utter disorientation and a learning curve as flat as the Kansas Plains.
Roger, let me play the devil's advocate here. You've described this as a passivity and an inadequacy and a failure to understand the problem. But could it be something worse? Could it be an active desire to align with these sorts of regimes? Certainly, understanding that even if one is doing nothing more than giving them running room, you are enabling them. You are empowering them to some extent even. Could it be that the administration under President Obama is actually aligning the United States with countries that I think you have correctly described as our enemies in our hemisphere?
Well, you caught me being generous.
I called out on it.
Doesn't happen very often, but it's, you know, that's a very plausible explanation. You know, when you see these folks that run the policy on Latin America, who have this guilty conscience about 100-year-old grievances with the Latins, and just assume that every problem caused in the region was, every problem in the region was caused by the United States in some way. You know, they do have this sort of ideological orientation that you may see a Chavez and a populist in Argentina and Ecuador and Bolivia, and just assume that we sowed the seeds of these problems. But it just shows an ignorance, a profound ignorance of history in the region. And I believe that right now the policy is being run by career folks, not the sort of hyper-ideological folks, and I think it's just a policy of passivity and people who don't, aren't doing their job in raising these issues to the president's attention. But, I'm being generous. I have even Democratic friends who say that when things get in the Oval Office and the president weighs in, it actually gets worse for the United States. So,
well, here's my view of it, for what it's worth, Roger Noriega, is if you've got a president who is essentially telling the career people, you run this but don't do anything, and the practical effect of that is to help enable, as I say, or perhaps worse, greatly facilitate the aggressive activities of our foes, it may be tantamount to the same thing as a very clear, explicit, and engaged policy of trying to prop up the Chavistas and their friends.
And frankly, Frank, I could support that proposition with about half a dozen anecdotes a week from friends of mine in the region.
That's what worries me. Listen, Roger, we're almost out of time. Very quickly, there is a new Southern Command commander coming in. He is a Marine Lieutenant General by the name of John Kelly. He's until recently been assigned as an aide to the Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta. We've had his, confirmation hearing. Anything likely to come out of this appointment, given what we've just talked about in terms of policy, that would help shore up our position in the region?
Well, quite frankly, with all due respect to his predecessor now, I think it has to be an improvement. I know that he's talking about the drugs issue now. I don't think he has deep experience in the region. But for that matter, General Douglas Fraser went to high school in Columbia, so he's the current fellow, and I don't think it's helped him figure things out very much, quite frankly. And General Kelly, the new general that's coming in, the Marine Corps, speaking to the Senate about the need to fight drugs, that's part of it, but you can't fight drugs in an effective way with partners that are undemocratic, where the constitutional order is being undermined systematically by caudillos. That's exactly what's happening in El Salvador and Nicaragua and in other places. And even in Mexico, we're wondering where these guys are headed.
To say nothing of the outright narco-trafficking regimes, which is also now increasingly a feature there. This has got to be the last word for the moment. Roger Noriega, we look forward to visiting with you again very soon. And keep us posted on these critically important developments. We appreciate your time tremendously. Next up, we'll be speaking with Gordon Chang, taking us to Asia and looking at whether the Obama administration is helping arm China's military space program. Straight ahead.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, couldn't hurt to call. And I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened. Period.
That is the role of the text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show.
Up in the morning and out to school.
Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here just like they did over there.
So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. A high point of our week is our visit with Gordon Chang, and we're about to do that, about several developments of considerable note in China and elsewhere in Asia, his area of expertise. He is, of course, well-known to us here at Secure Freedom Radio as a regular featured guest, but also as a contributor to Fox News and Forbes.com and WorldAffairsJournal.com, the latter two feature his columns quite regularly. Gordon, I guess the breaking news story of the day is that Beijing was subjected to, biblical scale rain, it sounds like, prompting flooding and an awful lot of unhappiness at the government. What is the upshot of that? Is it just a freakish flash storm, or is it a portent of still more to come, at least in terms of the public sentiment about the government in Beijing?
Yeah, the Chinese capital had about 7 inches of rain in a very short period. It, of course, caused infrastructure flooding. And people in Beijing, you know, to a certain extent are used to this because this happens every year. So this is not an unusual phenomena. And the infrastructure should have been able to take care of it. It didn't. And there's been about 37 dead. Probably there are going to be a lot more when the final accounting is made. And people are really upset because the narrative that you're starting to see in China is that, you know, the government can send somebody into orbit, it can do all sorts of wonderful things, but it can't take care of ordinary citizens. And this is a very dangerous storyline for Beijing, because it's becoming more and more common as we have these failures, not only of infrastructure, but also all sorts of other problems that really should not exist.
Yeah. Gordon, speaking of doing things outside of China, one of the things that I know you're following closely are developments involving the South China Sea. We have happily seen, it seems, the waving off of a treaty that might well have made matters worse. The so-called Law of the Sea Treaty now lacks the votes to be approved by the Senate. But quite apart from that, the Chinese seem, in violation of their own obligations under that treaty, to be asserting ever-increasing degrees of sovereignty over this vast body of water. What's the latest on that?
The latest is that China is sending troops into a new garrison that it has established for the South China Sea Islands. They're starting to use force in a much more visible way, and this is despite all of the obligations that you talk about. This is important because, essentially, China is militarizing the dispute, not only with Vietnam, but with the Philippines, and it also has territorial disputes with Malaysia, potentially with Indonesia, all countries that border the South China Sea. This is occurring at the same time that China is pushing up against Russia and Japan, South Korea, and of course, China continues its incursions into Indian territory. This is important because China seems to have lost some sort of strategic focus. It's just taking on everybody at the same time. And this betrays, I think, a real failure of thinking in the Chinese capital.
Which is not something that we generally associate with the Chinese, Gordon Chang, as you know better than just about anybody. These are very strategic folks. They've been patient. They've taken the long view. Is this kind of seemingly erratic behavior, or at least non-strategic or a-strategic behavior, evidence of some of the problems at home, do you think?
It has to be. I think, you know, China's going through a fracturing of the political system. We've seen all sorts of problems in the Communist Party since February, and it's occurring as the military is breaking free of civilian control, the erosion of civilian authority. And at the same time, China's been pushing up against many of its neighbors in the South China and the East China Sea, as well as Russia now. In the past, China was very clever picking on one country at a time and accomplishing its objectives. Now it just seems to have gone on a bender. And this shows, I think, a very dangerous trend in Beijing right now.
Yeah, it certainly exhibits a certain confidence in their ability to intimidate that can only portend ill for the future.
Gordon, hubris and arrogance.
Yeah, hubris and arrogance, exactly. Gordon, one of the things that probably feeds into that hubris is the conduct of the Obama administration with respect to China. Bill Gertz in the Washington Free Beacon today reports that last week the Obama administration decided to release militarily relevant space technologies that Loral, an American company that has done grievous harm to our national security by transferring some such technologies illegally in the past, will now be allowed to turn over to the Chinese space program. As we've talked about before, there is only one space program, and it is fundamentally a military space program. What are your thoughts on hearing about this this approval, and what do you think the chances are that Congress might reject it in the 20 or so days that they have to do so?
I'm aghast at this because the Chinese space program is a military program from the beginning to the end. This is just really wrong on so many different levels, and I do hope that Congress will do something. I'm not sure that it will, given the just various problems we see in the legislature in Washington, but nonetheless, this is something that every American, Republican, Democrat, hawk, dove, every American needs to pay attention to, because the Chinese space program is designed to undermine our efforts in space and designed to be a war-fighting program.
Yeah, on the ground and the oceans as well as in space, as you say. Gordon, let me turn to another topic that we visited about with you from time to time. I know recently you met with a woman I admire greatly, and I gather you do as well, Reggie Littlejohn. We've had her on the program, including, I think, in the past 3 weeks or so, talking about this bit of Chinese policy that is so odious and really seems so exemplary of the kind of totalitarian regime we're talking about here in Beijing. She is, of course, a woman who has been trying to counter the Chinese one-child policy and helping those in China who are doing the same. You've reported on this, including most recently a very powerful piece in World Affairs Journal entitled The Price of Life in China. Reggie has a notice out this morning, as you know, I think, to the effect that yet another Chinese woman, I believe a 46-year-old, has been punished for her husband having the temerity to participate in a petition to the government by being forcibly sterilized, even though there was, as a practical matter, no chance she was going to have any babies. This seems just barbaric and really horrific in the extreme. Give us your thoughts on the price of life in China and what this means, again, not just for the Chinese people, but for us.
The title refers to Chinese population officials coming up with fees that must be paid by people in order to have a second child. And this is and many times people cannot afford it because these fees are set at really high levels. And so what we have are the forced abortions and forced sterilizations. This has gone on since the beginning of the one-child policy in 1979, but now the Chinese people are actually starting to rise up because it is extremely intrusive, coercive, and the people just hate this policy. And what we have seen over the last 3 months or so is a series of forced abortions and sterilizations that have captured the attention of the Chinese public, and there has been online outrage over it. This is important because it shows the restiveness of the Chinese people and the intransigence of the Chinese government. This policy is a human rights violation of the worst sort and is something that the world needs to pay attention to. We just can't do business with China as usual, as it's killing people.
Mm-hmm. Gordon, just a quick question on this, and we'll have to let you go. Have you had any interaction with Chen Guangcheng, the Chinese dissident who was very active on this front since he relocated to the United States?
No, I haven't. Jerry Cohen, who is my mentor, is the one who was instrumental in bringing Chen to the United States. And Lydia and I, my wife and I, are going to try and see Jerry and Chen when things calm down a little bit. Right now, it's sort of a blur for him as everyone wants to speak to him, but we will do this soon.
Good, good. Well, when you do, please extend our very deep thanks for his past courageous work and our hope that he will continue to do so and lead in this effort, as you say, that is so important to the people of China and I think actually for the rest of us as well. Gordon Chang, we'll have to leave it at that. Thanks for joining us. As always, great to visit with you. We look forward to doing so again next week, and we look forward to talking with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.